Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily French Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined from a sweltering Johannesburg by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you?
I'm okay, Nicholas, and just for the benefit of the viewers, my camera seems to be playing up, so if I seem a bit jerky, this is Terence, not AI.
I'm looking, apparently there's an AI tool you can get now where you can it automatically adjusts it, so it looks like you're looking at the camera when you're actually turned away and are reading something. I'm wondering if I should try it out, although it sounds a bit spooky. Anyway, we're also joined today by Sarah Gon. Sarah, how are you?
Yeah, in winter, she is over in Johannesburg.
Indeed, indeed. And that has not been great for Joburg's water infrastructure. There was a very ominous message from Rand Water, which is the sort of entity that provides water to the municipalities in Gauteng over the weekend, which basically warned of an impending water system collapse. Rand Water said, quote, "Unfortunately, the crisis we sought to prevent has now materialized. The water supply systems in Gauteng, including Rand Water reservoirs, are critically low, and the situation is anticipated to worsen with the ongoing heat wave. Water shortage levels throughout Gauteng have significantly declined. Water storage levels throughout Gauteng have significantly declined due to excessive water withdrawals by municipalities, raising serious concerns." Now, Johannesburg Water, in particular, appears to be essentially denying this, just saying that they're not being given enough water by Rand Water. However, the Daily Maverick has done us all a very useful favor. Some good work by doing a report on how CADA deployment, specifically with relation to ANC and EFF CADAs, has got a very strong connection to the water crisis in Joburg. So something like 40 to 60%, let's say half of all water in the Joburg system is lost due to leakages and other problems like people bypassing meters and that sort of stuff. So there's an enormous amount of problem keeping the water system pressurized. There are also pieces of old infrastructure, which is what Joburg Water blames mostly for these problems, that cause problems all over the place and a general underinvestment in the water infrastructure in Johannesburg. Well, the Daily Maverick report looks into the composition of Johannesburg Water's board. And I'm going to read a little bit from it. A data investigation shows that Johannesburg has already had 1,604 water cuts in October and 3,318 in September. The months-long investigation by Daily Maverick reveals how CADA deployment by the ANC and EFF is a key factor crashing Johannesburg's water supply and raising the specter of a system collapse. They go through the board of Johannesburg Water's board here. I'm just talking about the qualifications of the people on it. There is not a single water engineer on the board. The chairperson is a member of the Young Communist League National Committee, but has no relevant experience for the role other than the fact that the SACP is in governing alliance with the ANC. The previous chairperson, I believe, was also a deployed member of the ANC Youth League with no relevant water experience. Daily Maverick data investigation, on Saturday, Rand Water, the city's bulk structure, issued that warning that I read out earlier. And they went through all of the board members to say that some of them, for example, one of them doesn't appear to have any kind of qualification as far as they can work out and may in fact just be a musician. So we have a board that doesn't seem particularly well qualified, or at least, you know, not to have anyone with any kind of qualification to deal with the water system. We've got a system that is in imminent danger. And what has been the response from the city? Well, when Ferial Hafaji from the Daily Maverick interviewed Johannesburg Water, the response was mostly just denials that there was any sort of serious problem, that there were that many uninterrupted, unplanned water outages, and really that at the end of the day, this was all kind of normal, and we just had a bit of an old system, and there was nothing too much to worry about. At least that's the impression I got from that interview. Sarah, let me start with you. We go on and on and on all the time about how catered employment has destroyed many state institutions. And I think this is just kind of drawing the line directly and saying no one on this board has the relevant experience is a clear indicator of what's going on. What do you make of this story?
Well, I think there's probably no better person to refer to in this context, both in terms of the particular article and in something he said very recently, and that is Professor Anthony Turton of the University of Free State. He said, a board is critically important for strategic direction and support. No kidding. It is vital for risk mitigation and viability and health of the organization. This is an existential crisis which could bring Gauteng to its knees. And here's the point. It's a massive board, but paper thin on technical expertise. You need turnaround specialists, refurbishment specialists, and those who know about asset lifecycle management. That's basically, state of pipelines and reservoirs and things that are failing dismally in Joburg at the moment. Now, what Turton said previously that I think is crucial is it was in an article that looked at who was to blame for the crisis. Was it Rand Water? Was it national government? Was it Joburg City? And he basically said that all had their problems. National under Nombolo Mokonyane when she was Minister of Sewerage and Water or whatever, or the other way around, in fraud and corruption in the City Highlands Water Project, which is 10 years behind and is meant to supply us. But he basically said the management at the end of the day that really has to take responsibility for this is Joburg. And this is what we've got managing Joburg. I mean, if it weren't so extremely serious, it would be funny. It's a bit like the sort of Monty Python's idea of the water board for the city of Joburg, frankly. I mean, I think one can't put it any more kindly than that. Turton has spelt out the sort of skills we need. Even I could have said we need those skills and I wouldn't know what I'm talking about, but I would be right. Everyone knows that you need, this is serious stuff. This isn't, turning on a tap and hoping things are going to happen. I really have no more. I have no words.
So, Terence, as I've said before, electricity problems are a big problem, and thankfully, it seems like load shedding seems to be receding, at least for now, into the distant past. Our memories of like a year ago. But you can often make a plan to get around electricity issues. You can run cables from somewhere else. You can buy batteries. You can buy generators, all that sort of stuff. When it comes to water, it's a lot more difficult, especially when you're in a city like Johannesburg, which doesn't have very big water sources nearby. In fact, I think it's one of the world's biggest cities that's not built on a major river or on the sea. And so this, what seems to be this growing crisis of water, I think has very serious potential to damage Johannesburg significantly. Maybe the rich can install JoJo tanks and bus in water and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, I don't think anyone's going to want to live in a city where you can't reliably turn your shower on or turn your tap on. What do you make of this?
It's a disaster. It's a looming disaster. And we've known this was coming since at least the 1990s, probably before. I remember about 1982, 83, if I'm not mistaken, growing up in Northern Natal when there was a very severe drought that lasted, I think, about 2 years, and came to a point where you effectively couldn't get water out your tap, or you could, but it was completely impossible. You could sort of, you couldn't put it through a geyser. You had to go and you issued these little paper tickets, and you would go to a water point, and you would have you get your ration of drinking water like that. And at that stage, that was seen as a major warning of what was coming. By the 1990s, it was already estimated that a city like Joburg was losing as much as 40% of its water to leakages. And you think about the implications of that. It's not just the resource seeping away. It's also what that does for the cost of the cost to consumers. because at some point the that volume of water, you know, has to be paid for. So we, you know, it's taking a financial chunk. There's environmental issues, and you know, this is just a very scarce resource. But there seems to be this view that you know, water is just naturally there. I don't know how to put it any better. And it's not ju this isn't just something on the part of the government, because in 2009 I wrote an article of publication, and when it came back from the reviewer, she had written, I'd made the point about how we could be facing a future with water constrained like electricity. And the response from somebody, very prestigious education, and you know, no one's fool, is, I think her comment was, "This sounds like fear mongering to me, but anyway." Dot dot dot. Well, looks like we are where we are. So yeah, you know, I think, and unfortunately, you know, it's not just, let's say, those hard limitations. It's also the corrosion of governance. Are people being appointed to boards for the prestige and the stipends, or because they actually add some sort of value? Or are people who could add value simply viewed as unpalatable and not worthy of consideration? Remember that Anthony Turton was forced out of the CSIR for writing a paper, which I think you can still find online, about South Africa's water supply system and the risks. And actually, you read it was very reasonably written, and it wasn't saying that, you know, like everything's dreadful, but it's saying that we are now at a point where we have to actually start making plans for this future. And for that, he was expelled.
Exactly. I think that's a great example of how, you know, sort of dissenting voices are crushed. And you know, why have someone who's just going to complain the whole time about things that are going wrong, when you can have a cadre who's put in that position and will support you at the next internal conference of whatever political party you belong to? Sara, you know, obviously this is a story that's going to keep coming up. I mean, I've been affected by this water outage a bit during this year, although not as bad as many other places in Joburg which have suffered, particularly in the areas fed by what's called the Commando system, which is sort of this area, I think, around Hurst Hill and Melville and places like that. That's an area that seems to have been really badly hit by a lot of this water stuff. Any final thoughts on this issue before we move on?
No, just to say that, you know, in the absence of change, and maybe one should look at whether there's a basis for actually for some court action to actually get rid of these people and put decent people in place. I mean, I'm not sure how one does that sort of thing. But the problem the government's also going to face is inevitably it's going to have to appeal to people to cut down on their water usage. It started already, but I mean, really cut down. And as you say, because it's one of those things people always see as being there, I think they're going, it's going to be an uphill task. And we are water abusers. I mean, you watch guys washing taxis and, you know, with a free flourish of water if they've got access to a hose. But at all levels of society, we just open our taps and we sort out our problems with water. And unless they can convince us through good education to do much less, we're not going to be much help.
Considering with how much skepticism the state is held by very many people, I suspect that there may be a bit of an uphill battle. You know, the government struggles to get people to even pay for things like water. I think it's going to struggle to get everyone to use less, particularly if they are paying. I think that's not going to go down well.
Well, you know, as you would know, as a former public representative, there are the provision is made, and some, and not entirely ungenerously, for indigent people to get the water that they need. I remember this would have been 1997. So this is when all these systems were being developed. Listening to a talk by a guy who was with the Department of Constitutional Development, I think they called it at the time. Bright young guy called Peter Vaz, and he was talking about tariff structures and whatever. And he said, look, we need to put a cap on consumption, and we don't think that's unreasonable where people are not able to pay. Where people can pay, then of course, that helps us subsidize and everything. The problem is, I think we've just got to a point where the whole resource has been so badly mismanaged, where consequences haven't been written for people who abuse it. Where I think the skepticism of government is at a point where the state simply lacks credibility. Now, funnily enough, for me, I do think water is something that is best a state responsibility, because I think it's a public good as much as anything. But this particular state shows no aptitude for operating it. So I think you have to seriously think about privatizing, long-term concessions, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think the water crisis in Johannesburg and probably some of the other Gauteng municipalities is going to be a major feature of the next local government elections in 2026. Just on the indigent system, I think the two main problems with it are, firstly, there's a lot of people who qualify for it who aren't signed up for it, just because it's for some reason not actually that well known. And secondly, there's quite a lot of people who don't qualify it who have managed to, mess with their water meters and that kind of thing. To give themselves essentially free water, and that obviously is not great when you're not paying for the water and you don't have any sort of cap on it. Your incentives to not massively overuse it are very, very low, unfortunately.
All right.
Okay, let's move on to our last, sorry, no, our next story. And this is sad news that over the weekend, former finance minister, former labor minister, and former Governor of the Reserve Bank of South Africa, Tito Mboweni, has passed away at the age of 65. His family said in a statement, quote, "It is with deep sadness that the Mboweni family announces the passing of former Reserve Bank Governor and Minister of Finance, Tito Titus Mboweni. The family is devastated by Governor Mboweni's passing after a short illness. He passed away in hospital in Johannesburg on Saturday night, surrounded by his loved ones." So, Minister Mboweni was one of those people who had been in government for a long time, and he had a lot of influence, I think, over the policies that had been implemented in South Africa for good and for ill. For ill, I would say, came mostly at the beginning of his time in government when he was the Labour Minister between 1994 and 1999 in the Nelson Mandela cabinet, where he was instrumental, I think, in passing many of the very restrictive labour laws that unfortunately have driven up our unemployment rate in South Africa today. He was then appointed as the governor of the Reserve Bank. And by all accounts, he seemed to have done a pretty good job there. And he stayed in that position for a long time. And I think some of his views perhaps changed on exactly the way to deal with the economics of the country. He remained very much, I think, in that ANC universe. And so he was perhaps not as critical of the party as he should have been. He perhaps did not push back against it, some of its bad ideas as hard as he could have. Eventually, however, he did get appointed finance minister, and he, I think, did as well as he probably could have, considering he had a party that very often did not seem to be willing, particularly, to listen to him when he was talking about the difficulties of South Africa's financial situation. He retired in August of 2021 to go live on the farm that he owns. And he was often famous for saying sort of slightly strange things on social media. Sometimes he seemed to get a little bit overly excited and say things that I think were not always super defensible. Other times he would sort of get into squabbles with other ANC members on usually sort of fairly low-ranking people on social media, just desperately trying to convince people, particularly towards the end of his time as finance minister, of the difficulties of South Africa's financial situation. So an interesting guy, and I think one of the better politicians we've actually had, especially in government for that long. Terence, let me start with you. What do you make of the life of Mr. Mboweni, and do you agree with my assessment of him?
Yeah, look, he politically he was what he was. And I think that his fingerprints are all over the labor relations regime, which I think have proven to be in many ways counterproductive. Give him his due on this though. My recollections of him back in the 1990s is that he often tried to phrase these things as this isn't just about black workers, this is also about Afrikaans engine drivers and whatever. So I think that he belonged to that generation, I think took non-racism quite seriously. As Reserve Bank governor, incidentally, he came to actually be quite critical of the laws he had put into place. I suppose you change your hat and you change your positioning. You also, I remember once said in an interview, I think it was the Financial Mail, like, I'm tired of all this affirmative action because my Afrikaners stay, become experts and do their work. Also wasn't, you know, wasn't particularly politically correct. And I think you're quite correct that in his final incarnation, he was working with a very, very depleted deck, and he was trying to talk some sense. I do think though that the caliber of the ANC, certainly the upper echelons, had declined remarkably. I've said on the show many times, say what you want about that 1990s generation. Many of them were, dyed-in-the-wool communists or whatever, but they did seem to have a greater sense of gravitas, and they seemed to understand that there were very weighty issues on the table. That this wasn't, just about, putting a Communist Party youth leader in charge of a board of a, let's just say, oh, for the sake of argument, a water utility, and then thinking everything's going to be fine. So yeah, and I understand that in going to the great beyond, he takes us to the recipe for pilchard stew with him, which I'm sure, many of us will be very grateful for.
Yes, his occasional insights into his cooking life on social media were always a highlight of South Africa's political Twitter. Sarah, what do you make of the life and career of Tito Mboweni?
I think above all, whatever his pros and cons are, he was a human being. He did eventually come to actually express regret for the labor laws he so excitedly put into place in 1994, as a consequence of 1994. I liked his cooking. It was not the cooking per se, but the sort of expressed love for food. Some of the recipes seemed a bit weird. And he was an avocado farmer. So, the man is a sort of holistic, but a personal, let me give a personal anecdote because I don't get a chance. Back in the day, I managed the Johannesburg Philharmonic Orchestra. And one evening, just before everyone was coming on stage, in walked Tito Mboweni with two bodyguards. He bought a ticket. He didn't ex ask me for one. He bought a ticket, and he and his two bodyguards sat. So he sat there watching the stage with his two bodyguards. And I think it was the most weird night of their lives. But I was deeply impressed by the fact that he came to a symphony concert. Cultural appropriation, obviously, like BE, wasn't entirely one a single paradigm issue. So I always had a soft spot for him, even though I disagreed with a lot of the weird things he uttered on social media later. But he certainly was a human being, and I'm not entirely sure I can say the same thing about that many of his colleagues.
He was I think he was very much added a lot of positive things, not just in policy terms, but also in his kind of attitude and the way he approached politics. He wasn't the same as a sort of grim, revolutionary, self-important windbag that unfortunately we see a lot of in government. He was, as you say, he was much more sort of human, and he had a good sense of humor and a personal touch. And so that voice will be definitely missed from our public discussion.
Can I just add that I think probably one of the indicators of this, his love of things across all cultural spectrums, spectra, were his pot plant, his aloe, and he gave a
Yes,
Latin name
which he
for it. He
used as
said
a
it wasn't
prop.
native. It uses a prop. Not an entirely successful gimmick, but it sort of spoke to the man or spoke about the man.
Yeah.
Yes. Anything to add, Terence?
No, look, for me, it's a, as I just reiterate, it's a case of deeply imperfect, but better than what we have now. And I think people often forget that that first cabinet was that were actually people of gravitas and standing. And I think also having stared down the barrel of South Africa's very plausible collapse, they were willing to pull back. And there is something boundlessly reckless and foolhardy about the way a lot of our current Xbox revolutionaries carry on.
Very much so. Okay, let's move on to our last story. And this is, I think, probably the last time we're going to talk about Pretoria Tswane for a while. And this is, we've finally seen now the formation of who's going to make up the cabinet of the Action SA mayor in Tswane, the new Action SA mayor, Mayor Moya. We have most of the portfolios, I think five of them in the city, including social development, finance, housing, roads and transport, utility services, going to the ANC. The EFF is picking up two, health and environment and agriculture, which in metros is not that important, although there are still a surprising number of agricultural things going on in cities, with the Good Party managing to pick up economic development and spatial planning, and Action SA getting two positions, corporate and shared services and community safety. So this does indeed look like a government that is going to be mostly dominated by the ANC, who have insisted that even though they do not have the mayorship, they are the quote leaders of the coalition in Tswane, being the biggest party. Sarah, your thoughts?
As we discussed before we came on air, it's amazing how good ends up in these situations. I mean, I used a none too polite description of the nature of their work, but funny, the one thing that struck me is the mayor that is sitting there is there because the DA agreed to create the position of deputy mayor to appease the Action SA, and she ended up as the deputy mayor. So when Sevea Brink sort of gave his farewell speech, he acknowledged the good work that she'd done amongst others. Well, I hope she really did do good work, because it's if it's not quite a betrayal, because politics is betrayal by and large. I wonder how she's going to find the council that she herself is going to be responsible for. And, Pretoria's water problems are probably not going to be resolved that quickly, because, hell, there's almost no geographical space between Johannesburg and Pretoria now. The political space is shrinking as well. But it is otherwise kind of the council one would expect, I guess, in the makeup. What can I say? Good luck, guys.
Yeah, this is a council of the there's 214 council seats in Tswane. When you put the ANC, Good, Action SA, and the EFF together, you get 118 seats. So that's a fairly comfortable majority, and I'm sure they'll get support from some of the other small parties like the PAC and the ATM. So this government will probably hold, I reckon, until the local government election, unless, of course, Action SA decides to switch again, or the EFF, I don't know, has a rush of blood to the head and decides to collapse all these governments. But I don't think that's going to happen. Terence, any thoughts on this issue in Tswane before we put it to rest and put the show to rest?
I wish them well, but I think given what has brought Tswane to this point in terms of the systemic misgovernance that caused a rebellion within the ANC itself, which is really kind of one for the books. This doesn't happen very often. The ANC brand can often sort of carry the misdeeds, or carry people, despite the misdeeds. I think that we are probably looking at people rubbing their hands and licking their lips at the prospects. And I think that Action SA, being an extreme minority now, is going to find, whatever its reformist pretensions, and I think that they are genuine. I just don't think that they're going to have any real leverage to make these things to make much headway. What I did find very interesting was when Mayor Brink was voted out, there were apparently were council employees chant, like talking about how the monster is now gone. Well, I think that says something about the state of professionalism, and apparently there was an internal memo, about that. But there's your problem right there. Until you can sort that sort of thing out, Sora and I wrote in our recent document. Well, the you know this is the monster is within us. It's the heart of darkness in the organization. Look, I do not foresee this being a happy couple of months ahead.
No, probably not. And one of the people I think who's going to really be on the chopping block here is probably City Manager Johan Mettler. Johan Mettler's, I think, appointment by Tshwane was a very good move. In fact, one of the most meaningful things that the DA-led government in that municipality actually managed to achieve. This is a city official who's got a long track record of performance and success. There was high competition for him among a variety of municipalities. I think Cape Town and Joburg both wanted to hire him, and the EFF absolutely despises him, and so they're going to be pushing for his firing, which would be a very bad thing indeed. With any luck, he can hold on, but considering the political climate, I have a bad feeling about that. Anyway. That's all the time we have for this. We hope that you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Fringe Show. I hope you all have a wonderful day. Cheers, everyone.